Hey, Matthew. Hey.
Hey, Corey.
It's Monday afternoon. We are recording the After Sunday podcast.
It is bitterly cold outside.
It's really cold outside. Yeah, yeah. I was walking the dogs this morning and I'm like, this feels like Winnipeg.
Oof.
I know. Yeah. It was -6, I think, this morning.
And your office right now feels warm, but the rest of our church offices are freezing.
It's cold. Yeah. We're not, I feel like often buildings and houses in this part of the world are not meant for anything colder than like -1 or something, you know?
Right.
It's like, I feel like in Winnipeg, this is my home now, but in Winnipeg, I felt like the houses were like, even the doors, you'd close the doors, like, oh, that's like a solid, heavy, thick door, you know? And here, like our door is pretty thin. It's like, I'm like, oh yeah, there's definitely like cold getting through.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I feel like right now, I feel like Bob Cratchit.
Oh, like what do you mean?
Remember?
Yeah.
From Christmas Carol?
Yeah, yeah.
He wants another coal on the fire.
Oh, yeah.
And right. Scrooge won't allow it.
Right. Oh, sad. That took a dark turn. Yeah. That's, Matthew, I watched a really good movie this weekend.
Tell me all about it.
I'm going to tell you. It's called The Swimmers. Sherry and I watched. Actually, no, Ruby and I watched it. Sherry went to bed about 20 minutes in, which often happens. But it's called The Swimmers. It's on Netflix. It's a true story about these two Syrian girls back in like 2013, 2014, when there was all that like,
oh, just with the crisis.
Like, the crisis going on in Syria. So, and they basically escape from Syria and they become refugees in Belgium. That'd be right. Where are they? No, Berlin. Sorry, not Belgium. Yeah, Berlin. So they had a crazy getting across the sea and like they're, and this one girl is the one sister is a really, really gifted swimmer. Hmm. And they end up, she ends up, they kind of find this, this coach who is, he's a good coach there. And they end up kind of like sort of a crazy story of how they actually start, she starts swimming under him. And in the end, she actually ends up going to the Olympics. Her dream is always to go to the Olympics.
Wow.
And I don't know if people remember this, but there was like, a refugee team, like, at the Olympics in 2016, I think.
Oh,
they called
right.
it the refugee. That was their country kind of quote unquote. So,
yeah.
And so she was part of that. And then she also represented the refugee team in 2020 as well, in Tokyo. Yeah. So it's really kind of, I mean, it's heartbreaking just to see what people went through. They really do a great job of normalizing, like, you know how sometimes, I don't know, sometimes I feel like when you hear about terrible things in the other parts of the world, it's almost like there's a bit of a numbness to it. Cause you're kind of like, wow, it's such a different culture, different environment. I can't imagine living like that. They do a great job of kind of making them just, it's like, no, this is like, Corey, this is like you and your family, you know, doing fine. And all of a sudden it's like bombs are coming. They just made it feel very, very realistic and much closer to home than I'm used to. So
It
was, yeah, really good. Really good movie.
So you would recommend it?
I recommend it. I'm trying to think if there's any reason why not to. No, I'd recommend it. Yeah, it's a good one. Yeah, definitely.
Awesome.
Really good story. Yeah. How about you? You watch anything lately?
Let me think. No, we just finished The Crown.
Oh, yeah. Good. Like the latest season.
Oh, did we watch the last episode? Okay. I think we have one more episode to finish The Crown.
Mm.
You know, the most recent series.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Who's playing Diana again in that one?
Don't know her name.
Okay. Oh, no. Oh, I was thinking Kristen Stewart, but that's the movie. That's not. Yeah. So something different. It's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
I think so. Have you watched The Crown?
We have. Up until this, I don't think we watched this season, though.
Oh, it's all about like Diana and
And Charles.
Charles,
and, yeah, yeah. Is it? Do they go into Diana's death or no?
I don't know.
Okay, because you.
I mean, that's
finished
probably
it.
The last episode. I'm
right,
assuming.
Right. Okay. Huh.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what I like about this episode?
Hmm. This season.
This season. Sorry,
yeah. Yeah.
Is that there's more about the Queen's faith.
Oh, interesting. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Let me tell you a bone I have to pick with Downton Abbey.
Oh, yeah.
Remember no Downton Abbey?
Oh, man, I have so many bones to pick with that show. Yeah, get in line, Matthew.
The butler. No, okay, so I felt like here's this movie about like 1920s, you know, 30s England, and there's like nothing about faith.
Mm.
They barely talk about faith. And I'm like if you travel in time to 1920s England, they're all talking about faith in there. Like,
right.
It's just weird that it was like a total non-existent part of the story.
Yeah.
I feel like that's bad writing.
Hmm. Yeah. Right. You feel like it's not being honest.
It's not being honest.
Yeah.
About
which
the
matters
times they
art,
lived in.
Good art. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It's a good criteria for art, I think, isn't it? Is it honest? Is it telling you, is it speaking truthfully?
That's right. Thank you, Corey.
Yeah, no problem. Okay. So, Matthew.
Yes.
You tackled a really challenging passage yesterday in the sermon, and I found myself a little uncomfortable at a few moments as you read those things out loud, because you're like, ooh, wow, he's like saying this. You know, like the... just the I do not permit a woman to, is that the one? Is that the right passage?
Yeah, well, we kind of did mostly 1 Corinthians 14.
Yeah, right.
Women must be silent in the church. Yeah, sorry, but yeah, I did go to 1 Timothy 2
You did,
oh,
right,
as well.
Silent church, yeah. I know, sorry, they kind of blur a little bit. But like, they do, yeah. And even just, yeah, you're hearing it's like, wow, that is like really, it's just so, and you know, in 2023, hearing that stuff, you're just like, oh man, this feels so tone deaf. But of course, you're reading from the Bible,
yeah,
which was written so many years ago. And yeah, we have to grapple with this. So, grapple with it, you did. Yeah. Let's
and
do this.
Just in full honesty here, I just handed Corey the notes for this podcast.
Yep.
And you were like, you feel like they keep getting bigger.
Yeah, these notes are getting longer and longer. Yeah, totally. I'm like, this is now. Well, anyway, it doesn't matter. But yeah, it's okay. I know you, but you said, what was your response?
I forget.
Yeah.
What did I say?
He said, well, these complimentarians keep on emailing me. That's so great.
That's right.
Do we need to cut that? That's okay, right?
No, yeah, no, it's good. Yeah. I honestly, you know, I think one glass half full way of seeing all of this is that our church likes the Bible, and lots of people who are disagreeing with me are leaning in and challenging some of the things I'm saying. So I'm like, that's awesome.
Yep.
You know, I've always thought in the book of James where it says, not many of you should presume to be teachers, my brothers, because you will be judged more harshly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
I've always thought about God judging more harshly.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right.
But I did think, and maybe that's what that verse means, but I did think, oh, there's a deeply practical piece to that. It's
totally.
That just teachers in general are judged.
Yeah. Totally.
Like if you get up to try to teach something, you should expect to be judged more harshly than people who aren't teaching. So I'm like, it's just kind of the name of the game. So anyway, I'm happy that I'm a part of a church that's opening up the Bible, asking deep questions. And I really am. I'm not just saying that. I do care about that.
Totally. Yeah. I totally agree. And it's great. Again, I feel like one of the things that we have in our church, which I really love, and I know that you love too, is it's very diverse. We're such a diverse group of people.
Yes.
Know? And I don't think that's a given. I think a lot of churches probably aren't. And a lot of that has to do with, you've probably exemplified just a lot of grace that way, and actually being like, we can coexist in a way that, and agree to disagree on things that aren't big rock things, right? And that's something you said at the beginning of this series, was that doesn't have to be a deal breaker at all, right?
Either way. It's not like a salvation issue.
It's not a salvation issue. Yeah, totally. Anyways, we should jump in.
Yes. So there's a lot of questions we are going to tackle today.
Yeah.
So
people on the website, right? People chime in.
Yes. Yeah. So some of these come from Slido. That's the software that catches all the questions.
Yep.
So thank you to everyone who's submitting questions.
Yep.
But some of these, a couple of these things are things that didn't fit in the sermon that I wanted to address, but I don't know, 5 or 6 of them come from the website.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. Let's do it. Mm.
Okay. So really quick, I know some people have only been listening to the podcast in this series. They don't go to our church, and so they just tune in. So welcome to you guys.
Yeah.
So this last Sunday, we were just looking at 1 Corinthians 14, 34 to 35, which reads, Paul writes this. He says, women should remain silent in the churches. They're not allowed to speak, but must be in submission, as the law says. If they want to inquire about something, they should ask their own husbands at home, for it's disgraceful for a woman to speak in the church. So we looked at different things. We just noticed that this verse cannot mean what we think it means upon a just kind of an initial read, because women are actually speaking in the church. Mm-hmm. A few chapters earlier in chapter 11, women are prophesying in Corinth. I also argued that prophecy has a teaching element to it. So I do feel like women are instructing others in the church. And there was this good news. There's this little phrase, a wife should learn, you know, husbands have the responsibility to teach their wives so that they can have an access to education. So that was very short, but
go ahead. You need to maybe explain why this is good news, because that sounds condescending at face value.
Oh, sorry.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah. Why is that good news?
Okay. Yeah. So if you didn't hear the sermon, it's good news because at this time in history, a lot of women were not given access to education. So what Paul's saying is, it seems like the questions women are asking in the church, which we have to imagine is a small, probably house, like a living room.
Yeah.
So the questions they're asking are disrupting the group. Hmm. You can almost picture it like a Bible study, you know,
right,
too many questions. So Paul's just saying, can you please ask those questions at home? And he's almost saying, like, I want you to learn.
Right. Yeah.
I really want you to learn, but just please do it in an organized way and do it at home, because your husbands have benefited from access to education. So if you've benefited from the access, then you should be loving your wives enough to share that good news
right.
at home. Okay. So cool. I think it's ultimately a good passage about women getting education.
Hmm. Cool. Okay.
So what's really interesting, I had multiple complementarians say that they agree that this verse doesn't limit women in the church, which I thought was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. Complementarians, again, just so we should talk about definitions.
Yes. Yeah. A friend of mine just said, think men, M-E-N, is in complementarians. And gal, G-A-L, is in egalitarians.
Okay.
So it's an easy way to remember it.
Yeah, right. That works.
So complementarians who would believe in male authority or male leadership, said that they actually agree with my assessment of this verse here, that they would say this is not a go-to verse for us when it comes to the issue. Hmm. Actually, Matt Chandler's church in Texas, called the Village Church, they're a complementarian church, and they said, quote, in context with the rest of the epistle, it's clear that Paul is not completely limiting women from speaking in the gathering, but he's restricting a certain kind of speech that contributed to disorder in the congregation. So they're a complementarian church, and they would have agreed with kind of most of what I probably said on Sunday.
Yeah.
So that's encouraging. And I just kind of want to say a couple of things about that. First of all, I don't think they're not following the lead of some leading complementarians who do think that this verse limits women's roles in the church. Mm-hmm. So men like Tom Schreiner or D.A. Carson. So I think there's a variety amongst complementarians.
Sure.
Right.
Yep. Yep.
But secondly, I just want to say I really am encouraged. It shows that complementarians are willing to analyze a verse using context, culture, Greek, other tools that are available. And that's going to be massively important in the next 2 weeks. Hmm. 1 Timothy 2 and Ephesians 5. Like, mm-hmm. let's use all those tools that are available to us to understand those verses. Anyway.
Yeah. No, very cool. That's I know I feel like I'm a resounding gong with this, but it's just interesting. This feels like another really stark, maybe the starkest example of where it's like you can't just take a passage like this at face value, right? In our English, you know, our English speaking 2023 world. As you're describing, it's like, wow, that feels like you have to really, like, that's a lot of homework to get to where you ended up in the sermon, right?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Totally. It's like, so yeah, it just, it's funny. It's not for the faint of heart. Sometimes, right? You're like, okay, you gotta do your homework in this. It's not just that. Again, I always think the bumper sticker, the Bible says it, I believe it, that settles it. It's like, huh? Okay, well, I don't know.
Yeah, right. No, sure. The Bible says it. And then you have to say, and what else does the Bible say?
Yep.
Let's
yep.
look at all the things
the
Bible
says. And does the Bible actually say it? Like, what do you mean by say it? Do you know what I mean? Like, is the Bible actually saying what you think it's saying?
That's right.
Are you talking about a literal, not that we need to analyze bumper stickers, but you know, I always feel like that feels a bit like it's a bit of a funny way of looking at the scriptures.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, one of the ones that I've been passionate about for years is the Bible says in the book of Revelation, well, this is Jesus who says, I wish you were hot or cold, but because you're lukewarm, I'm going to spit you out of my mouth.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So I grew up in a youth group that said, if you have a lukewarm faith, God hates that. He would prefer you to either be hot, which is on fire for Jesus, or mm-hmm. cold.
Right.
Like disown
Jesus.
That's
what I grew up with too, yeah.
But lukewarm is even worse than cold.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so fence sitting is worse than atheism.
Right.
That's how I heard it mm-hmm. preached to me.
Yep.
Well, later I go to seminary and realize that like this was written to the church at Laodicea. And Laodicea had hot springs and cold springs for water. And the city found both useful.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
You need hot water and you need cold water.
Mm.
They're both good.
Right.
They're both useful.
Yeah.
So what Jesus is actually saying is saying, I wish that you were useful.
Hmm.
I wish that you were of use.
Right. Yeah.
But because you're this lukewarmness, these springs kind of gathered together at Colossae or the city of Laodicea or something like that. And some scholars say it tasted gross by the time it blended together.
Mm, yeah.
It says, because you're lukewarm, you're neither hot nor cold. Meaning Jesus is saying, you're not useful.
Right.
That I'll spit you out of my mouth.
Huh.
But hot and cold don't mean what we in a modern way believe.
right.
on fire for Jesus or cold in our faith.
Yeah, cold-hearted.
It's not using the same metaphors or what is that? Analogies?
Yes. Yeah, yeah, right, right.
So it's you're dealing with like it's like how you read the Bible. So I remember thinking, "Oh man, Jesus would prefer I turn my back against him." than to be on the fence.
Yes.
That's terrible.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Like, Jesus doesn't want that.
No, right? Like, same thing for me. I definitely grew up understanding it, that passage, that the same way as you. I hadn't heard that. You must have preached that at some point. I don't remember hearing that.
Did I preach it? Yeah, we did a Revelation.
Oh, interesting.
Okay, so here's a podcast question, and I did have the name, but I won't mention the name, just in case, because this person, I think, was hurt. Their feelings were hurt a little bit. So I'll just say the question is, complementarians, in most part, do not believe women are more gullible. Gross mischaracterization and very disappointed. So somebody wrote that comment. So it's not really a question. They're just commenting that, that I suggested that complementarians believe that women are more easily deceived. Right. So there was a portion of my sermon where I said complementarians have this belief that women are more easily deceived.
Right.
That this comes from 1 Timothy chapter 2, and so because really the question is why are women not allowed to teach?
Yeah, right.
Why can't they exercise authority in the church? And I thought in my studies that it was because complementarians believe that women are more open to deception because Eve in 1 Timothy 2 seems to be, it's very clear, she's the one who the serpent went after, right? She's more easily deceived is the line of argument.
Yes, yeah.
So I want to really, really quick say, I hate straw man arguments.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So
totally.
Anyway, I want to say to the person that wrote this, I do apologize if this was a straw man argument. I want to like say why I don't think it's a straw man argument, but, I really don't want to, mischaracterize the complementarian position.
Right.
And so I do really want to apologize if I've done that, but, so I know that complementarians don't think the idea is very pleasant. It's not a pleasant idea to think that women are more easily deceived than men. And I'm glad this person doesn't believe this himself.
Yes.
That's really good. But unfortunately, I would like to push back. I do think complementarians believe this, and maybe the person who wrote this comment isn't aware that they believe this.
Yeah.
So I just want to read a leading complementarian. His name is Wayne Grudem. Some of you maybe know his name. In his book, Evangelical Feminism and Biblical Truth, he wrote this, quote, "Paul sees something in Eve that is representative of womanhood generally. Generally, women are more relational and nurturing, and men are more given to rational analysis and objectivity. Appointing women to the teaching office is prohibited because they are less likely to draw a line on doctrinal non-negotiables, and thus deception and false teaching will more easily enter the church." So Wayne Grudem, he wrote another book called Recovering Biblical Manhood and Womanhood with John Piper. And so this has been the textbook for complementarians in the past 30 years or so. So he's no lightweight. And I also don't think he's on the fringes, right? I also think straw man arguments are like quoting a leader who's kind of on the fringes of a movement or something like weird extreme example or something. But I don't think Wayne Grudem is on the fringes of complementarianism. He's kind of the
big name for sure.
Big name.
Big name. And John Piper, big name.
So I'm really glad that the person who submitted this question doesn't think what Wayne Grudem thinks. But I would, I would turn the tables around for the person who wrote the comment and I would ask, why then are women not allowed to teach or have authority? If it's not that women are more easily deceived, what then is the reason that complementaries can give? And to this day, I just personally, Matthew speaking, I haven't heard a good reason. Like I haven't heard a compelling why.
Yes, right.
And so what then would be the reason?
Anyway. You said you haven't, you still have not heard a good reason besides that's the reason you have heard. That's what you're saying.
That's kind of the reason I've heard.
Yeah.
And there's also, I've also heard one complementarian, and I think I mentioned this the first podcast, say, you know what? God hasn't given us a reason. Like don't be the, you know, don't be the child who says, why?
Right. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Mommy and daddy, why?
You totally, know, it's just yes, like, right.
Accept the truth. Yeah. Your father has given it to you. And
right.
There's right, not right. a good why. We just accept it. I mean, that's the other one I've heard.
Totally. And it sounds like, so it's, again, as you walk through just what you walked through, I'm like, well, it sounds to me like you know that you did not actually set up a straw man argument at all, right? Like, because you've literally read this in Wayne Grudem, and you've read this in other complementarians, that this is definitely something that many complementarians, I don't know if you'd say the majority or whatever, but like many complementarians absolutely do believe, right? So it sounds like there's no question.
I think so. I don't know the percentage of complementarians,
right,
but
right,
I'm saying
right,
if yeah. Wayne Grudem says this,
yeah, then
I think he's there'd probably at least be a good handful.
Yeah, totally. So yeah. To me, it just sounds like it's like, no, that's, and it, yeah, I agree with you. It's good that this person doesn't think that. But to me, I guess I'm just saying, doesn't sound to me like you need to apologize. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Yeah, because you're not setting up a straw man argument. You're saying what actually is, you've done the reading and you seem to know.
Yeah, it seems like it. And yeah, anyway.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Sorry, I'm just kind of plowing away here.
No, no, that's good. Let's do it. Yeah. Yep.
So another question is, what about other women who would have been disadvantaged without access to education? Where would they learn? Okay, so let me just give a little bit of background. The idea here was that I said that Paul addresses five different categories of women, those who are single, widows, married women, divorced, and another group that I cannot remember off the top of my head. And so I was saying this seems to be a passage about wives going to their husbands mm-hmm. to learn.
Right, yeah.
But what about all the other women who wouldn't have had access to education? Would they have been able to get an education? So an egalitarian asked me this.
Right, right, okay.
And I was like, oh, that's a really good question. And so I said, I do think he's talking to wives
yep.
who go home to speak to their husbands. But it would work if this was women in the church going home to talk to the men in their home too. Because remember I said that in the Greek language, husband and man
yeah.
are the same Greek word
yeah.
and wife and woman are the same Greek word.
Mm. Yes. That, yeah.
So it's really hard to know what you're talking about. But I guess I was trying to say my point on Sunday works as well. It works in the same way if it's man and woman. So for instance, Paul would be saying, hey, if any women here, if you would like to inquire about something, you should ask the men at home.
Right, right. Who and will presumably have an education.
Who will have an education. Yeah, yeah. So this may not be your husband, it could be your grandfather, your brother, your uncle, maybe even your son, if he's a grown son. They probably have all had access to education that whether you're widowed, divorced, single, or a wife, like they've had a greater access to education.
Yeah.
That's a quick one, but I just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah, no, that's right. That sounds, I found that very fascinating that, and I was telling you like, again, as Ruby is studying Greek, so she kind of perked up at that. I don't know if she had heard that or not, but she was like, oh, that's fascinating. This idea that it's the same word for, man and husband and woman and wife. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so it's so funny. Anytime you read your Bible, just know that a translator made a decision.
Yeah. Right. Just choosing contextually or whatever. Yeah. Right. It was funny. I'm not sure why I'm thinking this right now, but even you and I have talked about the reason, you know, reason, experience, tradition, you know, scripture,
yes.
right? And
yes.
I just noticed, it's funny, I noticed on Sunday, there was a number of times in one particular place where you were saying, it seems like, you know, it really seems, you said that a number of times, like I feel like, you know, could it be that, you know, and I was like,
yeah, yeah.
This is Matthew using his educated reason.
Right.
Right. Totally. Right, sure, and so when you're saying our interpreters have done the same thing to some degree, right? When they're saying, okay, so it says, here's the Greek word that means woman or wife, right?
Right.
And they're making a decision using the brains that God has given them to, you know, try to kind of do it. And maybe sometimes we've gotten it wrong. I guess we'll find out one day, I suppose, if it was actually supposed to be, you know, if a particular passage, you know, was meant to actually say woman or was meant to say, you know, wife. Yeah.
What an interesting idea. Like one day in heaven, we'll be like, okay, God, in the English language, in the 21st century, which of the versions of the Bible?
You have all these nerdy Bible students in line kind of waiting. Could I talk to, is Paul? Can't wait to talk to Paul about this. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. Was it the ESV? Was it the NIV?
Yeah. Who had this right?
Okay. Here's another question. what is Paul referring to when he talks about the law in 1 Corinthians 14? So this last Sunday, I did not talk about that part of the verse. So verse 34 says, women should remain silent in the churches. They're not allowed to speak, but must be in submission as the law says. So it's like, what law? What law is Paul talking about? Did you know, Corey Alstad?
No.
That nowhere in the Torah, the first five books of the Bible, and nowhere in the entire Old Testament do we see God giving a command for women to be silent and to submit to men.
Wow.
Nowhere.
Okay. Yeah.
Is that not fascinating?
It is fascinating. Because then you're like, well, wait a second. Paul.
Right. There are inferences from the book of Genesis,
right,
which we talked about a few weeks ago. But just from a plain reading, we don't find that in the Torah.
Okay.
And so, so this is not an appeal to Genesis, because as we saw a couple weeks ago, Genesis is not teaching a hierarchy as God's good design. At least that's not what I believe. So this is not Paul referencing the Torah. So I think a compelling argument can be made that Paul is referencing the law of love.
Okay.
Now, at this point, I don't want any deep biblical people to be like, that sounds like a very hippie thing to say.
Right, it's not.
Because listen to Paul in Romans 13. Listen to Paul. He believes in this law of love.
Okay.
So he says this, Romans 13, let no debt remain outstanding except the continuing debt to love one another. For whoever loves others has fulfilled the law. The commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not covet, and whatever other command there may be, are summed up in this one command, love your neighbor as yourself. Love does no harm to a neighbor, therefore love is the fulfillment of the law. So for Paul, love is the fulfillment of the law. The law of love would mean the church should behave in a way that is not disruptive, that submits to one another. Worship, in Paul's mind, is going to flourish as the law of love is practiced in an orderly way. So the law of love will lead some wives who've not received a formal education to kind of hold on to their questions, to learn, but to learn in a way that doesn't disrupt the worship of their fellow Christians. And that's how they're going to love their neighbor in the church. And by the way, after all, he's just wrapped up his famous chapter on love, which is 1 Corinthians 13.
Right, of course.
That's part of the context here. Like just the chapter before, he says, love is patient, love is kind, it doesn't envy, it doesn't boast, it's not proud, it does not dishonor others, it's not self-seeking, it's not easily angered, it keeps no record of wrongs. So I think what Paul's saying is that this law that Christ gives us to love your neighbor, it should be evident in the order of worship. And so wives are doing an amazing job loving their neighbor when they save their questions for home.
Huh. Okay. I mean, so here's my question for you, a little pushback, because I love that. But I'm like, so number one, I guess, what would someone like a Wayne Grudem, complementarian, how would he interpret that line right there about the...
He would say Genesis is part of the five books of the Torah.
Yeah.
And in Genesis, Adam is formed first.
Okay, so even though, because Paul said, sorry, I'm trying to find the, what is Paul, what's the passage is?
Romans 13?
The one where, just what we were just talking about, where he says, as it says in the law, whatever, must be in submission as the law says. The law says must be in submission. Doesn't that feel like, it's like, I understand that they would say, okay, it's clear that because Adam was born first, that he gets to lead, you know, Eve and stuff. But you're saying it doesn't actually say it anywhere.
Submission is mentioned nowhere.
Right. So it just seems like,
in the Torah.
So it just seems funny that they would say, you know, even like, it's like, well, actually, no, Genesis doesn't say this. It might, you know, a complementarian would argue that it implies this.
Yes.
But nowhere there's no statement saying what Paul is saying here, right?
No. There's no statement.
Okay.
Which leads us to feel like, so then where is this submission? Well, 1 Corinthians 13, this love chapter, has a lot to do with this church that mutually submits to one another.
Right,
you're laying down your life. It's you're patient towards one another. You're listening, you're caring for one another. So it's I mean, that's a theory, right? Like, but you have to We don't know.
Like there's any satisfying.
No.
There's no other satisfying answer, right?
Right. Right.
Because I think I can imagine some people being tempted to say, could Paul have just screwed up and been like, you know, but we know that Paul was number one, you know, we don't believe that. But number one, we think that Paul was actually an expert in, like, he was a very, very educated man, right? In terms of in the Old Testament, the Torah.
Yes. And
so it seems funny that he would make a mistake like that, right?
Right.
Like, it says it. It's like, where does it say it? And I was like, I thought it said it somewhere. I don't remember now. You know, whatever. Like,
right.
That seems kind of funny. Huh. Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. It's fascinating. This is why PhDs write their books.
Right. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Next question from the website.
Yep.
Tell us more. Okay. I think they mean
tell us more. Yeah.
Tell us more. Tell us more about the history of the early church. For example, if women are to be in leadership roles, how did we end up with a culture where they're not? Okay. I'm excited about this moment.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you excited, Corey?
I don't even know why, but I feel excited.
You better get pumped.
I'm super pumped.
Because I like church history. I love history.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
And one of the big questions I had going into this is, like, what does history say? Like, how has the church always behaved?
Right.
As we look back 2,000 years, do we see this glowing track record of how women have been treated? Boy, that's a leading question.
No, we don't.
Right. I think it's important to look back and to see how the church has understood this issue.
Hmm.
It doesn't mean the church has always been great on certain issues. We can think of issues like slavery,
mm-hmm. yeah.
right? That has been quite mixed.
Yes.
You find some abolitionists who are anti-slavery, mm-hmm. but you also find some people who are very much pro-slavery.
Yep, totally.
So it's important to look back and go, how has the church for 2,000 years, you know, thought through this? So complementarians will argue that they have history on their side.
Right, yeah.
Right? And mm-hmm. we egalitarians are supposed to be left going, hey, you know,
yeah, yeah.
Are we the new kid on the block who has no legitimacy because we have no history?
Totally. Yeah.
So the complementarian reasoning sounds something like this. So they would say something like, for years and years, the church has maintained that men and women are equal in dignity. Both men and women are equally made in the image of God, and they're equally gifted and called into ministry. But there are roles that for 2,000 years have been reserved for men. Hmm. This is not about females being inferior. It's about authority and roles in the church. But I would like to humbly argue that is simply not true.
Whoa.
If we just look at history.
Okay.
So I'm kind of outside the realm of the Bible here,
okay.
just to bring our podcasters up to speed.
Yep.
So the truth is that history, the history of the church, has quite a sinful, patriarchal storyline.
Hmm.
And I'm not sure we want to claim the church's history as a good one.
Oh.
So I would caution a complementarian from saying, hey, this history has been awesome.
Right, right, yeah.
Women have been equal in dignity. It's just we've had different roles.
Right.
And I would say, that's not a great reading of history.
Hmm.
So in my studies, I was helped by Taryn Williams. He's a South African author.
Yep.
Who asked this same question. And he produced a series of quotes from men in the history of the church that were quite troubling, if I'm honest.
Mm.
So I want to read some of these quotes to you, Corey.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I'm ready. Hit
we're
me.
Starting at the very beginning, and we're going to roll right through the Reformation.
Okay.
Here we go.
All right.
Oh, and by the way, Corey.
Yes.
I just need to say, mm-hmm. this is going to be very hard to listen to.
Okay.
It's a list of really intense quotes from church leaders, and they're very heavy. And if you are a woman who is mm-hmm. listening to this, I promise this will be hard to hear. So you may want to skip ahead. So it's just a little service warning.
Okay, that's
for,
good.
For about what we're about to hear.
Okay, all right,
okay?
Thanks. Yep, let's do it.
Origen, writing in the 3rd century, said, quote, it is shameful for a woman to speak in the church. Hmm. Odo of Cluny, around the year 936, said, quote, woman was the author of man's fall. Even with our fingertips, how can we desire to embrace such a sack of dung?
Wow.
Writing in the 4th, 5th century, John Chrysostom said, quote, she taught Adam once and taught him badly. Therefore, let her descend from the professor's chair. She is now subjected to the man because of sin. Yeah. Tertullian, writing in the 3rd century, who's the father of Latin Christianity, said, quote, woman is a temple built over a sewer.
Whoa.
Tertullian again, do you not know that you are each an Eve? He's saying this to women.
Yeah.
The sentence of God on this sex of yours lives in this age. The guilt must of necessity live too. You are the devil's gateway. You are the first deserter of the divine law. You are she who persuaded him whom the devil was not valiant enough to attack. You destroyed so easily God's image, man. On account of your desert, even the Son of God had to die.
Wow.
St. Augustine gets in on the action, writing in the 5th century, quote, as a helpmate, a function that pertains to her alone, she is not the image of God. However, the man, by himself alone, is the image of God, just as fully and completely as when he and the woman are joined together into one. His idea is that man alone is the image of God, but a woman is not the image of God until she is joined to a man.
Right.
That's Augustine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thomas Aquinas, writing in the 13th century, said, quote, women are naturally subject to men because in men reason predominates. The Dominican theologian Albert the Great said, quote, woman is a misbegotten man and has a faulty and defective nature in comparison to his. Therefore, she is unsure in herself. What she cannot get, she seeks to obtain through lying and diabolical deceptions. And so one must be on one's guard with every woman, as if she were a poisonous snake and the horned devil. In evil and perverse doings, she may be cleverer, that is, slyer than man. Her feelings drive her toward every evil, just as reason impels man toward all good.
Cool.
Now, let me pause and say, is it just the Catholics? Right?
Right, yes, yeah.
Surely the Protestants were better, right? Let's skip to the Reformation and let's be like, let's hear from our friends Luther and Calvin. And,
okay,
so Martin Luther, quote, the word and works of God is quite clear that women were made either to be wives or prostitutes.
Oh my goodness.
More Martin Luther. Quote, men have broad and large chests and small, narrow hips and more understanding than women, who have but small and narrow breasts and broad hips. To the end, they should remain at home, sit still, keep house, and bear and bring up children. Sorry, more Martin Luther here. Quote, she was created to be around the man, to care for children and to bring them up, and to be subject to the man. Men, on the other hand, are commanded to govern and to have the rule over women and the rest of the household. But if a woman forsakes her office and assumes authority over her husband, she's doing a work that comes from her own fault and from evil. For God did not create this sex for ruling, and therefore they never rule successfully. And by the way, I just want to pause and say, I'm sure for the women who are listening to this, this is incredibly painful.
Oh,
I'm just
awful.
Like, yeah. I'm reading these quotes and it just must, yeah. Anyway, I know that this is a kind of an academic study for me, but a painful study for women. Mm-hmm. So John Calvin, the leader of many Reformed churches, he wrote, quote, there is no absurdity in man's commanding and obeying at the same time in different relationships with other men, but this does not apply to women, who by nature, that is by the ordinary law of God, are born only to obey. For all wise men have always rejected Cocritian, the government of women, as an unnatural monstrosity. So right there, John Calvin says, the government of women is an unnatural monstrosity. Richard Hooker, who is the father of Anglican theology or the Anglican Church, he said, women's judgments are commonly weakest because of their sex. The very imbecility of her nature and sex binds her to be always directed, guided, and ordered by others. And then finally, John Wesley, writing to his own wife. These are his words to his wife, encouraging her to carry on in her domestic duties. He says this, quote, do not any longer contend for mastery, for power, money, or praise. Be content with a private, insignificant person, known and loved by God and me. Of what importance is your character to mankind if you were buried just now, or if you had never lived? What loss would it be to the cause of God?
Oh, terrible. All these
heavyweights.
Like, giants of the faith, right?
I know.
You're just like, wow, awful, awful.
It's absolutely awful.
Yeah. And it's funny, like even you read the stuff and you're like, that, this is what would send people to counseling for years, right? Hearing this stuff. Like, it's awful, yeah.
Yeah, can you imagine sitting in churches where you heard these preachers say this to you?
It's terrible, yeah.
So everyone is involved here, right? Catholics, Lutherans, Anglicans, those from the Reformed churches, Methodists, right?
Mm.
And so my point is this really a history that you want to claim for yourself?
Yeah, right.
Is this the glowing track record of equality that complementarians are pointing to? When Christians say things like, this is the way it's always been in the church, and we shouldn't change the great tradition of the way God has been at work, right? Is this a great tradition to be proud of? I think it's good to call this a sin.
Sin, yeah, yeah. Totally, yep.
So none of these quotes sound like Genesis 1 to 2.
No.
Right? They sound like Genesis 3.
Yep. Yep.
This is the curse.
Totally.
This is the effect of the fall. And and just one of the questions I'm asking is, has the church actually gone with culture for 2,000 years?
You know?
I can't speak to the early church, like the very early church.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, like Paul, Peter, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, in the culture around, for most of history, there's been a patriarchal culture.
Right.
And I think each of these church leaders is reading the Bible through the lens of the culture that they're living in, which is a bad idea.
Yeah, totally.
You have to listen to Scripture alone.
Mm-hmm.
So if I, you know, so I love Taryn Williams' quote. He says this. Remember, he's the South African theologian who introduced these quotes to me. He said this, quote, complementarians claim that theirs is the historical position of the church, evidences serious historical amnesia. Though all Christians and churches today will make categorical statements that women are equal to men, hardly any seem to remember that only very recently did the idea of male-female equality become accepted doctrine in the church.
Right. So just to be clear, I feel like you're saying, sorry, Taryn Williams is saying, the complementarians claim that theirs is the historical position of the church, evidence is serious historical amnesia. He's saying their claim that women are actually equal, they just have different roles. That seems to be in particular what he's saying, right? Yeah.
So that's exactly what he's attacking.
Yeah, totally. Because clearly in the quotes that you just read us, it's not. It's like, you know, they're saying like you, at least implying, maybe even totally saying it, that you are lower, you're actually not equal to men.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah,
because he's saying like for a large portion of the church's history, men and women have not been considered equal.
Right.
Women, as you can tell, haven't even been considered made in the image of God.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
They're a sack of dung. They're only meant to be prostitutes. They are of, who cares if they were to die? Like, it's terrible.
Totally.
Right. So this idea that like, no, Matthew, calm down. But complementarians have always believed in equality, just different roles in the church.
Right.
You know, it's like,
Nope, that doesn't work.
That doesn't work.
Yeah, it's a little unsettling, right? We've all had that experience, I guess, where you're like, you have a hero or someone that you're like, oh, that's my, you know, and then all of a sudden you find it's like, oh no, he was actually really terrible to, you know, in this way or that way. Or, you know, I think, unfortunately we have a lot of those. I remember you talking about Karl Barth, you know, that
Karl
way too,
Barth,
had a mistress and, you know, you're like, oh, it's God just seems to have so much patience with a very messy, messy body here on earth.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
The body of Christ. Yeah. Yuck. Okay. Well, those are pretty heavy quotes, Matthew.
Those are heavy quotes.
They're really heavy quotes. Yeah.
Guys,
I'm like, ugh.
I know. I actually thought I had this whole section. I was going to do this on Sunday morning, but I thought maybe the podcast was a bit better.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. Yep. It's heavy stuff.
What are we looking at for time here, Corey?
Okay.
How are we doing?
Hang on here. Let's just see, Matthew. We are at 42 minutes ish.
All right, we got a few more.
Okay, yep, a couple
chance,
more. We're
doing chance good. For a couple more.
Yep, let's do it.
All right. So another question in the podcast is prophesying as found in the New Testament actually fully synonymous with preaching like a lead pastor or elder biblically? And I said, great question. My answer is yes and no. Sometimes the prophetic can look a lot like preaching, giving a word to a particular people at a particular time. But sometimes the prophetic looks nothing like teaching. The point's important because the prophetic has an instructive element to it, and it does have an authoritative element to it. Did I say that correctly? And women were prophesying. So this was an authoritative word from God from women in the church.
Right.
So women weren't silent. That's kind of just the point I'm trying to make.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah, exactly. Like,
is that okay?
And even whether it's, I think it sounds to me like what you're saying is that maybe they're not identical necessarily, at least at all times. But the point is that they're definitely instructive. They're definitely teaching. Prophesying is teaching. And it's also taking authority in its own way, for sure.
Yeah, sure.
So that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that.
Okay.
Oh no, should I push back?
I'm just kind of rattling okay, off yeah. stuff.
yeah, totally. No, I it is a good question because I wondered that, and I know you had said, I think was it last week that you said that, that we had talked about on this podcast about how the priest role in the Old Testament, how, and we would normally look at the priest role and say, well, that's like the pastors of today. But you were saying, actually, right. No, it's not. In fact, if you want to look more at what pastors are like today, it's better to look at the prophets, actually, like the prophet, that's yeah, right. people that prophesy. So that makes sense.
That's right.
Even though it's not identical, it's far more similar than the role of the priest would be in
exactly.
the Old Testament.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay, cool.
Cool. Quick note to say, I am trying to grab questions from the website and speak to the issues that we just dealt with the previous Sunday. So I noticed a lot of questions about headship and 1 Timothy 2, but I'll deal with those in the next couple weeks.
Okay.
We'll have a chat about those.
Yep. Sounds good.
It should be just fun and juicy deep.
Can't wait.
It's going to be crazy.
So good.
Okay. So quick question from the website. In Sermon 1, when you said that a curse of hierarchy was placed after the fall, do you believe that we today in our sin are free from this because Jesus came? And just a quick note about that. I would say yes, but we're not fully free yet. Mm-hmm. We live in the already not yet.
Right. Yeah.
Which means that Jesus has already accomplished our freedom, our hope, our life. He's given us life, but we're not yet at the new heavens and new earth. Mm. So I think there's ways in which the curse, there are elements that are being healed in the curse of the fall, mm-hmm. but there's ways in which we still have a long way to go in the future, you know, in a new heavens and new earth. And so I think people probably did get a little hung up on the curse of the fall, like which of these things gets reversed now, which later. It's kind of complicated, but I really do believe that with the issue of hierarchy of men taking authority over women, I hope in the church we begin to see some of the already happening.
Right.
As hope in Jesus. It's mm-hmm. like we're already beginning to see the way this hierarchy is being dismantled and
totally
healed.
You know what's interesting, Matthew? I feel like you've made a real point of, again, in the spirit of unity of, and this is, you know, you're not going to like this, but like in the spirit of unity saying like, this is not a big rock issue. But when you start talking like that, there's part of me that's like, well, it kind of sounds like a big rock issue. When you're talking about like, this is a result, like hierarchy is a result of the curse of the fall. The fact that, you know, men having authority over women actually, and you know, as an extension in the church, right? We were talking about this now. You know, to me, as I hear that, I'm like, again, not to offend, I have lots of complimentarian friends as well, but I'm just saying that actually sounds kind of like a big deal. It doesn't sound that small to me.
Ah, I see what you're saying.
You know?
I think it's a big deal. I just don't think it's
crystal clear, like a slam dunk.
No. Okay. No. It's weird. I feel like it's very clear in the scriptures right now.
Yep. Yeah.
Where I've landed, at least in my life, I'm very passionate about it.
Yeah. So I was going to say, like a year and a half ago. Sorry, I'll let you finish that.
No, go ahead.
But I do love this, by the way. I love that you are, because I feel like a year and a half ago, you were not. Right, I think you were like, when I talked to you, it was like 49-51.
Yeah. I'm a complicated person, Corey.
It's okay. Hey, man, we all are. No worries. This is good, Matthew. You're in a safe place.
No, okay. What am I saying? I am saying, how would I say this? Okay, it's apples and oranges, but let me give you an example.
Okay.
If you said to me, something about when Jesus is going to return.
Right.
And I would say, listen, there's some really good evidence on one side and there's some really good evidence on another. Mm-hmm. And if you take one side, I'll argue the other. And if you take another side, I'll argue the other.
Right.
You know, like I'll tell you he's coming back soon and because of this reason, or I'll tell you he's coming back a long time from now. Like basically I'll become an argumentative person regardless of who I'm talking to, right? I can try to argue the other side. Mm-hmm. And it feels kind of 50-50. But then, you do a lot of the research and you go, hey, the other side has a lot of points, but I am very convinced of my side.
Right.
I could still argue the other side.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But my side is very convinced. I feel very convinced. And I think it matters.
Yeah.
I think it matters. Because if you think Jesus is coming back soon or late or whatever the argument is, you're probably going to live differently. Mm-hmm. You're going to interact with people differently. And so it matters. It really matters.
Right.
But yet I still believe I can be a brother to you if you disagree.
Yeah. Yeah. But it sounds to me, sure, no, it's good. I guess maybe what I'm pushing you on, and you don't have to answer this, but I feel like it sounds to me like you, more than ever, in terms of how I've known Matthew, you really disagree with the complementarian position.
Whoa, hold on.
So, I'm just saying, based on what, it seems to me you're very convinced of the egalitarian position, which implies that you would really, you're actually like, no, I really do disagree with the complementarian position. And you can absolutely be brothers with complementarians.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's fair.
Which I, like I said, I don't think, I do feel like that has been definitely a progression in the last year from how I've known you to be. Yeah. Anyways.
I want to be someone who's a unifier. So
in
the global church,
yeah.
When you think of churches around the world,
mm-hmm.
I think a lot of churches around the world are probably living complementarian positions because they're in patriarchal cultures.
Sure.
And they're saying, listen, this is the way it needs to be. Like if I'm in Saudi Arabia and I'm surrounded by Muslims, we're probably going to pick a lead pastor who's a male.
Right.
Because probably the best way to reach our Muslim neighbors is for them not to be instantly offended and run for the hills.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I haven't really thought through that a lot, so I hope that makes sense. But I'm saying sometimes missionaries will make decisions that are kind of like, what is it? Acquiescing or they're kind of saying, listen, we're going to lay down some of our rights to do things a bit differently.
Right. Yeah.
In order to reach a culture that we just don't want them to run away instantly offended.
I don't know. It's like, it makes, again, I think I've said this before, but it's like if I was asked to go and lead worship in a little rural town in Manitoba, you know, and it's like there, I know that it's like, there's good people, but it's pretty, you know, I have my own feelings about it. It's kind of legalistic, especially when it comes to worship. They only want to do hymns. They actually think choruses are like, you know, wrong. And so it's like good people, but just, I really disagree with them a lot. Well, I could choose to show up there with my band, you know, with a band and just like rock out
and
on
a smoke machine
and a smoke machine. That's right. And Hillsong tunes and rock, you know what I mean? And it's like, but no, of course I wouldn't do that. And you'd hope any Christian wouldn't do that. Right. You'd want to be like, well, no, I'm going to lay down my rights for this. So it makes sense what you're saying. No, for me, I'm just interesting. I think I'm just trying to kind of, you know, I'm not even sure what I'm trying to do. I think it's fascinating a little bit to see where I feel like you're at these days, and you do seem really excited about it, which is awesome.
Yeah.
I think just discovering all these really fascinating Greek words that actually, or like contexts that you didn't know about before, right? And none of us knew before, which is super fun.
I think you're right. I think when you were talking to me in the last like 10 years, I had never done what I did this summer, which was a deep dive.
Right. Yeah.
So for 3 months, it's all I thought about.
Yeah.
And Tanya, the entire sabbatical, had to hear me talk about this stuff.
I was nervous when you went on sabbatical because I was like, I hope, because I've been egalitarian for a long time. But I was like, oh, that is going to suck if Matthew comes back complementarian. No, I did. I have lots of friends. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying I hope that's not where we're going as a church. I'm glad we're going the direction we're going.
Cool. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I think you're probably right, though. I think I'm getting more excited the more I dive in, and I'm like, oh man, this is making most sense of the data.
Yeah, totally.
I think, as I put it together.
It seems to be. Yep, I agree.
Okay, we'll try to hit a couple more quick before we end. Another quick website question.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't prophesying require evaluation from others precisely because it's not an authoritative teaching like it's shown in 1 Corinthians 14:29? So that's a great question. Let me bring everyone up to speed. So in 1 Corinthians 14:29, we read Paul say, two or three prophets should speak and others should weigh carefully what is said. So I think what this person is trying to get at is that women could prophesy freely in the church because prophecies were then weighed
by a group
of people.
Hmm.
And what complementarians say, I don't know if that's what the questioner wants to get at, but I'm assuming they are, is that men maybe were to weigh prophecies or something like that.
Right.
But like, so women could freely just say whatever they wanted in the prophetic, but they needed, but a later a group would vet this.
Right.
So yeah. That's why women can prophesy, but not teach. Okay. So I would say yes. So the prophetic word alone is not authoritative. So I would agree with that.
Yep. Okay.
You can't just say whatever you want from God and expect it to fly in the church. So it does need to be weighed by the church. It's a good point. But I would say that is no different than teaching, right? The New Testament is filled with warnings about false teaching. And there's a huge encouragement to weigh false teaching,
right?
weigh the teaching to see, is it false or is it not, you know?
Totally.
And that's what we see in the Bereans, right? They took Paul's words and studied the scriptures and diligently to see if what he was saying was true.
Right.
So I think I'm saying prophecy and teaching both need to be weighed. So that does not make teaching or prophecy any less authoritative.
Right.
Am I making sense there?
Yep, that does make sense.
Okay.
It feels a little more immediate maybe, right? Like that passage seems to imply that in that moment.
Yeah.
You know, whereas if you're teaching and Matthew says something a little weird, you know, it's like maybe that week, you know, there's some discussion and there's some, you know, as opposed to the prophesying, seems like right there and then. Right then and there, you know, but we've had, I don't know if people remember this, but we had a situation like this. I think it's okay to say, and if not, I'll just cut it. But years ago, I don't know if you were here when we had a speaker who came from somewhere overseas, somewhere in Africa. This guy came and he was sharing and I believe he started prophesying about this particular company that he had a vested interest in that people should donate to, and he felt like there was going to be big donations towards his company towards the end of his sermon.
Oh, I remember hearing.
Do you remember this?
Yeah.
It was really awkward, and I was playing the piano. I remember being like, "Oh man, it felt so weird."
Were you crescendoing on the piano?
Yeah, totally, he wanted me to play while he was doing this, like the wrap up music or whatever.
Oh boy,
it was awkward. Yeah, and so I was like, "Yeah," I remember playing quietly and just like being like, "Oh, gross! This feels gross to me." And I think Rob was our lead pastor at the time. I think he didn't cut it short, but he kind of did sort of end it. And then the next week, I think, cause there were some people that came up and maybe some people that are listening to this podcast came up. And I think Rob and the elders actually phoned anyone who they noticed had come up and said, "Hey, we don't really think this is healthy or good. And we don't really stand behind it." And the next week, Rob, apologized from the stage and said, "Hey, you need to know that was not, we don't think that was good at all."
Wow.
It was good. Really awkward, but good.
They weighed the prophecy.
They did. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It felt a little, unhealthy.
Yeah. No kidding. Wow. All right. Two quick ones.
Okay.
Quick question from the website again. How is it that Paul in separate occasions did not really mean that women should be silent? Isn't that convenient for egalitarians? Kind of a loaded way to ask the question, but anyway. So I think their point is, listen, Paul brought up women being silent twice in two different occasions. So clearly that's important. And here you are trying to explain it away.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. My quick response would be, in a few places, Paul tells masters how to treat their slaves in the New Testament. 1 Peter 2, 1 Timothy 6, Romans 13. Because Paul does this multiple times, does that mean slavery is good? I don't think so.
No.
Just because something is mentioned a few times doesn't mean that this is an ongoing way things are supposed to be. Paul's addressing particular concerns in particular churches 2,000 years ago, and he's trying to bring clarity to those issues. So I think we need to take each individual issue and wrestle with it on its own, not just add up the amount of times it's addressed as though that makes some kind of point.
Right. Totally. Yep. And it seems to make sense that, like, this is not necessarily a heavy point at all, but it seems like it makes a lot of sense to me that I love that this is a radical idea that women, should be able to teach and have authority and, you know, whatever, like in the church and be equal to men in that way, in their roles and everything else. But they were also in a very patriarchal culture and society. And so for Paul to say some of these things, depending on how he said it, again, we're working through a lot of that, it wouldn't have. It's not a loaded thing to say in that context. You know, like today in 2023,
right.
if we were going to say things that are like, you know, we'd be very, very careful to really make sure that we're going over the top to explain what we don't mean and what we do. You know, Paul didn't, he wouldn't have had that same concern because like, that's not the waters that he's swimming in, right?
Right.
It's like
right.
people wouldn't, unfortunately, it is unfortunate that people wouldn't be offended if actually at face value he was saying this stuff. You know, if it was just,
sure.
if he's actually saying, no, women actually just, you don't get to have any authority. I assume in that culture, everyone would be like, yeah, that makes sense. That's kind of what we know that, you know, sure. this is kind of normal. But of course, it makes it even more beautiful, the fact that he's actually speaking something that's pretty radical and pretty countercultural, actually,
right.
at the end of the day. So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Let's wrap it up with this one.
Okay.
So, from the website, and this is from our dearly loved Kenward Chin.
Awesome.
Yep. We love Kenward.
Yes. He's great.
Shout out to Kenward. Okay. He said this. He asked this. What counsel do you have for people who are faced with changing deeply held beliefs? Learned from high respected people about issues such as egalitarianism. That's a really great question, Kenward. I think he's asking this, just trying to kind of go, how do we change our mind? Like when we hold such deep convictions about something, how do we even begin to change our mind? And so I love that question, and it's a good one to end on here. I would say just hopefully a humble response here from someone who is still learning how to do this myself. I would say sit still and trust the engineer. Those are words from Corrie Ten Boom. Hmm. She said, when you go through a dark tunnel on a train, do you panic, jump off the train and throw away your ticket? She says, no, you hold on to your ticket, sit still, trust the engineer to take you through the tunnel.
Yeah.
And I feel like God is obviously the engineer, but he's given us a community of people who are called to love us. And I would say if you're feeling nervous, if you're feeling like you're in a dark tunnel, if you're unsure of where this train is going, don't run away. Don't make impulsive decisions. Just sit still, trust the process. I think give it time.
Yeah, yeah.
And stay open in humility. And if it's true, then it'll set you free, right? No matter how hard it is.
Yes,
I think. Yeah. No matter how hard it is. And if it's true, I think you'll begin to see the fruit of it.
Right.
Because a tree's known by its fruit. Yeah. So I don't know. For me, I feel like this has been years and years of defending both sides. I think that's what I had... we had just talked about earlier.
Yes.
But I honestly feel like this has been a lifetime journey so far for me in thinking about this stuff. But as I've tried to sit still, trust the engineer, give it time, stay humble. But I say that also knowing that I'm not a woman. Yeah. I haven't had to deal with this in any practical way. Mm-hmm. I've never been limited in what I could do. So there's many ways in which I don't have a, it's not been as emotional a journey for me. It's been way more of an intellectual journey.
Totally.
Right?
Yep, yep.
And even that's been hard for me, but I can't imagine what it's like for a lot of women who've had to walk through this. And
oh, totally, yeah.
And even women who maybe have been complementarian and they're trying to go, you know, I've been limited in my life, or I've been told certain things, and how do I know what's true? Anyway, I can't imagine what people are walking through, but hopefully some of those... sit still, trust the engineer, give it time, stay humble.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think?
No, totally. I think that's all really good. I think it's totally true. And I think, like, I feel as though it's funny, if I was talking to an individual person who was saying like, how do I know? I think I would just say, you know, relationships matter. I actually would say, like, again, I think Matthew has been very clear that we don't all need to agree with this at all. I think that in my mind, I would trust my friend Matthew, who actually has done a ton of homework on this, you know, and not that saying that, you know, you're 100%, there's no question, you know, because there's lots of smart people that don't, you know, don't agree with this. But I'm like, number one, this is not an orthodoxy issue. It's not a salvation issue. Yes, it seems to be really controversial with some people, but it's also like you know if you I think there's something about having a, like, you are our lead pastor. And there's something about saying, okay, in a healthy way, because there's lots of unhealthy ways of doing this, but there's a trust. I feel like you've built up a credible trust, like a credibility and a trust. I think you've apologized when you've got things wrong. You've done that before, where you've, or when you've been like, oh, I shouldn't have worded that way, and I want to apologize because last week, you know. Sure. I think it really matters. I think building up credibility actually really matters. That's something that's beautiful about longevity. You've been here for what, 14 years, 15 years, something like that?
Yeah, 15.
Yeah, yeah. So I actually think that matters. And so I think that's what I would actually say to someone. It's like, you know, I don't know, hear him out. Let's hear him out. And at the end of the day, it's kind of like Matthew's also said, you don't need to get on board if you don't think so. But I'm listening to it. I'm like, well, he's done way more homework than I have. And this kind of all rings true. And, you know, I feel like there is a trust that's been built there. And so yeah. And again, the tree, you will know a tree by its fruit, is super helpful. I think it can be very practical as well, right? It's like, okay, well, I don't know, in 5 years, well, you know, if like this all went downhill, everything went crumbling. It's like, I don't think that's going to happen, but that is helpful. Anyways, sorry, that's just me babbling, but
no,
that's kind of how I see it. Yeah.
Thank you for sharing some of that.
Yeah.
Cool.
I guess that's,
well,
that
for
it?
The one or two who are still listening.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, what is it like? Over an hour later?
Yeah, a little bit over. Not too bad. But
we,
yeah,
thank you.
Yes, we do. We do thank you. North Langley, we love you. We will see you
we
we'll see you on Sunday morning.
Yeah.
It's going to be good.
Peace.
Peace out.